the avatar thing is extremely valuable. And so if your avatar changes, all of a sudden it's unrecognizable for the first handful of months. Don't change the logo, et cetera. Make sure people can find it and understand who I am. Then they'll get used to my voice. And now I'm not a stranger on the call.
Most hosts never achieve the results they hoped for. They're falling short on listenership and monetization, meaning their message isn't being heard and their show ends up costing them money. This podcast was created to help you grow your listenership and make money while you're at it. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Adam Adams.
Hey, hey, it's Adam Adams. And generally, as you may have gotten accustomed to, any even numbered episode is supposed to be me alone pouring into you and your business. However, I did so many different interviews with so many really, really good people that on this episode today, even though this would typically just be me pouring into your business, me just sharing something short, like 5, 10, 20 minutes, where I poured into you and your podcast and growing your brand and really getting you in front of everybody, I'm going to do that today with an interview. So let's get right into it. What's up, podcaster? It's your host, Adam Adams. And today I am joined with Christian Bacassa, who has a couple of podcasts. One of them he recently launched with a co-host. The co-host name is Manny, by the way. It's called Transcontinental Minds. And so that link will be in the show notes. Additionally, he has another podcast that's been around for a much longer time that's getting some really good traction. It's called Fly Fishing Insider Podcast. So it's really niched to just fly fishing. And we want to talk about it because he's had 162 ratings and reviews. And Christian, I don't know if you knew this already, but did you know that only 0.6% of all podcasts, 0.6, have 100 ratings or more? Were you aware?
I did know that. Yeah, I actually learned that from one of your shows.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great statistic and it's something I've worked on and have a few tricks for that have worked really well.
So how long have you had the podcast? Like, when did you launch it?
So it's an interesting step for me because I actually purchased the podcast.
I forgot about that detail. Yeah. You told me when we were on a call before.
Yeah.
You purchased the podcast. I think that's going to be something really interesting to the listener as well.
Really interesting for me too, because I had collaborated with the person on marketing and we got along really well, but he basically came to that point in his, which most podcasters come to, which is I'm burnout. I'm not making money. It's taken a lot of my time. And he had a family member who said, we're taking a lot of time to this. We're not making money. What do we do? And I could tell he was struggling with it. And I approached him and I said, look, if it's affecting you in that way, why don't I buy the podcast off of you? And we had a very frank conversation about it. I did that about 2.5 years ago. So he had a fairly well-established show. It's like 123 episodes. And it had a good name, et cetera. And I felt like I didn't have to go through that initial pain of growing to a significant amount to where I could start to charge, but it was there, but he didn't understand how to monetize it. So I took my monetization experience and did that.
Okay. So you've been monetizing it since you took it over. Cool. A lot of questions. So tell us, how did you buy a podcast? If we're listening and we're like, oh, I don't want to start one. I'd rather have one that's already got some listener base. That'll be easier for me. Or if we're listening and we're like, I've had a podcast for a while. It's not really making as much money as I thought it would. I want to sell it. What do we need to be thinking about in a transaction of buying or selling a podcast?
Two different customers, right? You have the buyer or the seller. In a buyer's standpoint, I really want to position myself as a couple of things. One, do I understand the market? Do I understand what the pains that the seller is going through? So I heavily focused on, okay, he's not monetizing. It's costing him money. He doesn't necessarily have the skill set or know how to do that. He's gone through the pain of, I start a podcast. I don't really have anything to offer, at least that feeling. And he gave away services. And so now he's trying to charge for services with the same people he gave services. So it was a big struggle for him mentally to break that barrier. And then I think I mentioned it before, but the time-wise was a big thing for him. He was investing a lot of time and effort into it. He was taking it away from his family. So I targeted that. And I basically came to him and said, you know, what do you want to have and what do you have as assets? And I knew his assets were his shows in the Greenfield materials. But the other asset that was extremely valuable is he had an email list. And the email list was around 15,000 people. That's very significant. And so I did a little bit of research to understand what the value is per email of the show. And then I basically went aggressive and lowballed them. And I said, look, you have these assets, but you're not making any money with them. I don't know the quality of them. A lot of your emails came from contests and things like that, that people sign up for, but they're not really on an email list. And I just kind of put that position in place and then gave them an offer of a per email value, which included the assets. So that was one way I went about it. Now, when he combated with that, we talked about, okay, well, what is the show doing? What are the values of that? And we talked through those things. And essentially, most people come back very high value, but you also have to recognize that they're often, in that case, at a level of exhaustion and they're desperate. And I relied on that. And I negotiated heavily. I made good points and I was willing to walk away. There's always another opportunity is the way I looked at it. And I could always start it on my own if I really needed to. And if I was going to buy it, what's the difference between the money that I would put forward to growing a show or buying a show at that point, and which was more valuable? And I came up with the purchasing of the show because I could immediately get into monetization from that standpoint.
So did he like come back with a different value and then you went higher, or did you just buy it for the same price that you first told him, or how did that work?
I asked him, what are you valuing at? What would you like to sell it for? And he came back with a fairly significant number that I thought was too high. And I essentially cut that in half. And when I cut that in half, I provided my insight as to why it was that way. And I was pretty firm in my negotiation as to, this is why I think it's that way. And that's kind of how I'm going to stand. And when I did that, I think it just really put him on his heels of, okay, I'm going to get out of this and I'm going to get out of it with a couple bucks and I'm going to live with that.
Okay. So was there a contract? Did you have an attorney involved? What were the terms?
Yeah.
And so, was there any other assets to talk about?
Right. Those are great questions. So there was an attorney involved. The attorney was a friend of mine. I got some guidance from him and he gave me really a blanket purchasing agreement. He advised me on some certain things that were really important, such as making sure you own the assets. There's no kind of clawback issues. There was a timeline associated to his delivery.
What would a clawback mean for the listener? What would it mean if you had a clawback?
Like if you had a clawback issue, it would be to where maybe I received a payment for a certain item that was passed on to me and he could claw back the payment for that as it wasn't owned by me. So let's use the example of he sold lodging activities and I could do referrals for them. Well, he could claw back saying, oh, well, you move forward on referrals, but those referrals took place during my time. So I'm going to claw back the money for that. So you want to be very careful of what you transfer. When the transfer date occurs, it's 100% owned by you. But at the same standpoint, you're protected. So for example, if he made agreements that he didn't disclose to you, such as marketing agreements, et cetera, or purchase things, et cetera, if those came back to the organization to say, hey, we need to receive payment for that, or you cannot do this or do that with those materials, that was for him to manage and to disclose with you. And if he didn't do that, you're not responsible for it.
I got another question. I'm writing it down. Stay the same. So here's the question. I'm thinking about when you sold this or when you bought this from the previous owner, the previous host, a couple of things can happen. Number one, maybe you do more marketing and the podcast grows. Maybe you're just a way better host, or maybe you already have a big following. So the podcast numbers, they go up. The more likely thing to happen would be that the podcast numbers go down. So people like him, they're used to him, they've been listening to him, and they're like, whoa, I don't know this new guy. Let me find another show. Mm-hmm. So more likely the numbers will go down. And what I was typing when I started the question was like, or did it stay the same? So how about the numbers from the day that he had it to the day that you had it? Did the numbers go up, down, or stay the same?
Yeah. I'm going to answer one thing real quick on your last question before I answer that. And this was really important to me.
Okay.
When I purchased the podcast, I set it up so that my payment, it was a sectional payment over 12 months. So every quarter I paid him. And that was really valuable to me because I didn't have a ton of money and I was able to split my payment up into four big chunks versus one massive chunk at the start of the year. that also held him responsible for delivering what he said he would deliver. So I think that's a good thing to notice. In regard to your second question, yeah, the numbers going up and down was a big concern of mine. And what I did is a couple things. One, I actually acted as a speaker on his podcast a couple times. So I started to learn what his process was and what he was doing and how it would flow. The next thing is that gave me an introduction to the people in his podcast, so they knew who I was when I took over. The other thing that happened was when I took it over, I really concentrated on staying similar in nature to what his best producing podcasts were, but also emphasizing that there would be some changes and some excitement about that, and did that with the podcast. The last thing I did is I did some really simple social post measuring. I would say, hey, do you like the podcast how it is? Do you want to see these changes, et cetera? And I got some really good feedback. And that also came from some of the review notes. I reviewed the notes, what they liked, what they didn't like. Sound quality was an issue. So I addressed sound quality. Interruption in talking to the guests and hosts was an issue. So I worked on that pretty hard. But I think a lot of things can be done via homework to get yourself set up for success.
So I'm hearing four things that happened, and I'm curious if you ever co-host with him for a while.
I didn't co-host with him. We had one transfer hosted podcast where we came on. We basically said, there's some big news coming. I want to introduce you to Christian. He's your new host for the show, yada, yada, yada. And then he interviewed me a little bit on that. But then I turned and flipped the script and interviewed him. What have you learned along the way? What are you going to be doing next, et cetera, and kind of gave that story as well.
Okay. So you interviewed each other as well. Okay. So I'm going to write that down. In no particular order, I've got five things that you did. Interview each other. All right. So you guessed it. And then also you looked at the content. You looked at which content was the most popular, which episodes got the most downloads. You decided to make sure to stay focused on those. Number three is you asked the audience what they were looking for, what they liked, what they didn't like. Number four was you went and read the written reviews of the podcast. And so any perhaps negative feedback, and you mentioned a couple of them, like the audio quality, which you said you fixed, and what it was, interrupting the guest.
Yeah. At times he was known for being excited, I think, in his question asking. And they would be listening out a few things and talking through a story, perhaps. And he would, well, what to tell me about that, you know? And it was like, I really wanted to hear what that guest wanted to say. And that was just a little bit of feedback. And some of that feedback came through written, but I also called probably 10 different people that I knew listened to the podcast or sent them and said, what do you think of this podcast? And got really smart. Good feedback for that.
Good. All right. So six things. You called listeners. You actually knew some of the people that listened. And number five was you interviewed them. You interviewed him. He interviewed you. He interviewed you about like what might change. This is your new host. You interviewed him. What are you going to do? What's next for you? What are you working on? And that helped to transition. Good stuff. I sold a podcast. And the only thing that I did differently was we had 3 months worth of co-hosted episodes. So 3 full months of multiple episodes per week where he and I would be on the same show. We changed also like the artwork. The artwork added his name. I sold it more than 3 years ago and it still has my name on it. It has his name and my name.
Yeah.
So just a couple little things that we did because we wanted to make sure that we kept listeners. So for you, did listenership go up, down, or stay sideways?
It went up significantly. Wow. And I changed my artwork as well. One of the things that I worked on heavily was a brand.
Okay.
He had multiple styles of artwork that didn't really fit together in a group. Yeah. I made sure all my color tones were the same and all of my fonting was the same, et cetera. And that was an omni-channel approach from podcasts through social media, website, et cetera.
Yeah. So making everything congruent, everything matching. I love that. I'm thinking about a couple other people that sold. I sold, and then I have a client who just sold. And when I sold, it went up. I think we had 3,500 downloads per episode. And after the 3 months transition, we had 6,500 downloads per episode. It got much bigger. And I was almost like sad. I was like, oh no, maybe I do want it.
Yeah.
But it did get bigger. And I was disappointed because I'm like, I could have sold it for more or whatever, you know, whatever right. goes through your mind. You're like, oh, that's so valuable. Somebody who worked with us, a client who had a podcast for a certain amount of time and they were ready to retire. Their podcast made them a ton of money and they were ready to retire. So I think we had worked with him for 2.5 years and he wanted to sell it to another guy. And I consulted for free. I tried to help them and I gave them a lot of feedback, a lot of things to do. And for some reason, they chose not to do all of the things like the ones that you listed: guesting, content, asking the audience, written reviews, interviewing each other. They didn't do all of them. They did some. And they went from one color of artwork to a completely different look. They went from one guy's face on it to the other guy's face. And I think what I've noticed is we need to go a little bit slower. We need to like keep the logo as congruent as possible through the transition and make a lot of things. One thing that I loved about what you said you did is you got in and said, this is where the podcast has been. This is what it's changing to. These are the things we're keeping. These are the things I'm excited about. I think it was basically how you said it.
Yes,
these are things
exactly.
I'm keeping, but these are things I'm excited about. And I like that approach rather than this is where it was. This is what it's going to change to. Because a lot of humans, most of us, we're afraid of change. There's a few habitual. People that we want change, but most of us are like, oh, it's changing. So just the wording that you use, like, this is what I'm excited about. This is what I'm adding to it versus this is what I'm changing. I think it allows a lot. And in this case, they went from one topic to a different topic, a similar avatar. But these people came to learn this thing, and these people are now coming to learn this other thing. That's an issue. Like the Fly Fishing Insider podcast, by the way, if you're listening, Christian's got two podcasts. I already mentioned Transcontinental Minds. That link's in the show notes, and also Fly Fishing Insider. That link's in the show notes. So you can check out Christian and follow him either on his business podcast or his fishing podcast that he's purchased. So going back to just kind of talking about selling a podcast, on mine, we did a really good job slowly transitioning for like 3 months. We were co-hosts and my face is still on it 3 years later, 3.5 years later.
Yeah.
And you did a great job by doing all those things. Now, my client was in a bit more of a hurry and they rebranded at the same time as they were selling. And so the person who came to listen to this podcast isn't the same person who will come to listen to the next podcast. So Christian, interestingly enough, this morning, I'm not lying or exaggerating, this absolute morning, I woke up to a message from the buyer of that podcast. And he said something like, I'm wondering if I should just pull it up. I might pull it up. Then I don't have to misquote him. Of course, it's going to be slow. There it is. So the buyer says, he gives me like 5 messages. Hey, have you seen this other person's report? Because my company, we do reports for how your podcast is doing. And I hadn't seen it. So I said, no. And he goes, I'm looking for it because the downloads appear to be super low. Do you have dates of when you helped him launch and the transition and when you were just editing? And then he sends me a report. And then he goes back and says, I don't mean if you've ever seen one of his. I mean, if you've seen the most recent one because the numbers are so low. And then he goes, do you mind if I book a call to discuss it this month? Because I want to get it back where it's back above 10,000 downloads each month. So I think it was like at 25,000 and now it's like below 10,000. So less than half, less than half the downloads. And he's asking why. Well, I can tell him why. I don't even need that to sit down with him yet. A, it's because you transitioned too fast. B, it's because you transitioned from one avatar to a different avatar. And C, when people are coming to this, they don't even, they're like, oh, I don't remember being subscribed to this podcast with this host because there wasn't a smooth transition. There wasn't all the things that you mentioned. And so they went down like below half of their downloads from 25,000, I haven't looked yet, but I'm going to guess like 6,000 downloads per month. And it's he's frustrated. He's frustrated mm-hmm. because he thought he was buying an asset. And I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated because I kept telling him, you need to do this slowly. you can't completely rebrand. You know, think about doing this over the course of a year or two, not over the course of 3 months. And that's a huge point.
I'm going to interrupt you just for a second because the avatar thing is extremely valuable. So my logos and avatars didn't change till probably 4 or 6 months later. And I specifically didn't do that because when people research and look for their podcast, they search by name. But the first thing that they typically do is visibly look, where is the logo? They don't read the name of the podcast. They look for the logo. And so if your avatar changes, all of a sudden it's unrecognizable. And they start to just do what everyone else does. Snap. Instantly, my attention span falls down and I start to look for whatever it is in the category or niche that I'm looking for, and they'll transition to something else. So I was really adamant about, for the first handful of months, don't change the logo, et cetera. Make sure people can find it and understand who I am. Then they'll get used to my voice, like you said. Now I'm not a stranger on the call.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I'm hoping that this has already been valuable to the listener. I want to get into a couple of things. We've talked a lot about just rebranding, transitioning, purchasing, some of the things that go into that. And I think if the listener is going to rebrand a podcast, they've gotten a ton of value. If they're going to sell a podcast, they've got, and or buy a podcast, they've gotten a lot of value. So let's take a quick break. We'll go to our sponsor. Then when we get back, I want to talk about what you've done to grow that podcast. Since you said that the numbers have gotten bigger and I see 162 ratings, I want to ask, what are you doing to get ratings? Because I think that the listener needs to know that as well. We'll be right back. Hey, my friend, as you know, this episode is sponsored by my company, growyourshow.com. We want you to be able to have the best tools at your disposal without costing you a whole arm and a leg. So right now you can get a free list of vetted equipment that, like mics, mixers, webcams, sound treatment, editing software, everything that you need. I created the whole PDF with direct purchase links just to save you time and money to help it be more convenient for you. So this free PDF will help you skip all the guesswork. If it's on there, it's vetted and approved by yours truly. And if it's not on there, it's probably not worth the money. So go ahead and get yours at growyourshow.com/PDF. Let's get back into the show. We're back with Christian Bacassa, and we've been talking about him rebranding his podcast, how he guested on it a couple of times, how he made sure he knew what content was there, what content was valuable, what wasn't working. He even polled the audience. He polled the audience by calling his friends and going to the written reviews and maybe even making Facebook posts. There's a lot of ways that you could do that to poll your audience to figure out what they like and what they don't like. He got interviewed and he interviewed the other host. He also kept the logos the same for at least 6 months after the podcast so that it didn't just change abruptly and have a completely different rebrand. Unlike my client who sold to the other guy and they didn't do they did a lot of them, but I think that they rushed it. So before I go to my last question, Christian, I want to find out, what did you do to get so many written reviews? Because that social proofing is really valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, that was something that I really learned from you on your show, is make sure you have that social proof. And I've applied that everywhere, whether it's my podcast, blogs, marketing advertisements, et cetera. And it's really helped me quite a bit. Two things that I did on my podcast to get reviews that were really important. One was I literally opened up my phone and went to my text messages, and I knew the top 100 so text messages were probably people I was really close with. I created a blanket format that said, hey, I'm really trying to grow my podcast. If you can help me out and leave a review, here's a link. Scroll down to where the reviews are on Apple. And on the left side, there's write a review. It was really key for me to tell them how to do it, because I got, the first time I did it, I got a lot of responses. How do I do this? Et cetera, et cetera. The only thing you need to be careful about is if somebody's on Android, they don't have Apple, so they'll have questions, but that's pretty far and few between. So that's a big one. And that's probably a 90%+ conversion. These are people that you know. It's really high. So to get 50 reviews in a day is not out of the question at all. And it depends on your network, but not out of the question. The other one that I found is extremely valuable is I go to my Instagram page, and whenever I see somebody follow me, I have a pre-planned message that says, "Thanks for the follow. I'm assuming you heard about us through the podcast. Will you do me the kindness of leaving a review? Here's a link to Apple and Spotify, and here's how you do it." And the conversion rate on that is above 50%. So you can significantly add them. And I go through cycles. You know, sometimes I'm on there just like bam, 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 every day for a week. Sometimes I leave it for a month. But it's an endless conveyor belt of people coming into your system that you can convert to reviews. So I think I'm going to give you one more. The last one is you're going to automate your interview setups with Calendly or something like that so that everybody has a login. In your follow-up email, that should be your number one bullet point. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show. To help me promote your show and all the other shows, leave a review here. And that almost always gets done.
Awesome. So I got three things, not two. One is you text 100 people, your top 100 people, and it's like a 90% conversion rate. You might be able to get 50 in a day. Number two is on Instagram, you have a pre-copy and paste, ready to go message. And it basically says, "Thanks for the follow. I assume you found us through the podcast, and please leave a rating and review." And I also know that on a business page, certainly, you can automate that so that when somebody follows you, the algorithm says,
tells them.
Yeah. You can do that on Facebook and also on Instagram. So that's really good. You could either just copy and paste it and do it when you think about it and when you see it, or you could also have it set up to automatically go. And I think that quote is really good. I had never shared that on my podcast before. And so this is definitely one that Christian came up with on his own. And number three was, you have your Calendly. When somebody comes to be part of your show, you ask them to listen, rate, and review. So really good stuff. Now I want to talk a little bit with Christian on, with his podcast, he has a lot of traction and it grew after it sold. And so if you're listening and you're thinking, you know, if I buy a podcast, I don't want it to tank. I want it to grow. Even if I just have a podcast, I'm not even buying one. I've got a podcast. How do I get it to grow? Let's talk to Christian about that now. So Christian, what takeaways are coming to your mind for the listener right now?
Yeah, I think it's really addressing both scenarios that you described, the buying and selling side and growing side. And that is, content is king. What is your value add to your listener? You really need to understand that. So every time I build content, which is my podcast, I'm thinking, what are the value adds that I'm bringing to the listener? And that happens during the process of, right, I'm not going to change. I'm going to go about it this way or that way, et cetera. But what is the value add? Then once I understand what the value add I'm bringing is, I have to understand what is the value add and how does that correlate to how I'm going to monetize the system? And essentially, you want to provide really your best stuff on your podcast. But what you're going to do is try to monetize in ways, whether it's a product, that you make the information more digestible, longer term, things like that, that people can actually utilize. So that's one monetization method. The other monetization method is through advertisement. And for me, there was two types of advertisement. One was, I'm going to go out, I'm going to be a seller. I'm going to go out and sell my podcast, and I'm going to get people to sign up for marketing ads. The thing that I found about that that was very difficult is when you sell an ad, you have to contract it. It takes a lot of work. You have to go through a lot of sales cycles. You're typically talking to people who do not understand the podcast world and podcast marketing world. So you have to go through tons and tons of description. And ultimately, when it comes down to the end of the day, you don't have a way to really relate it back to the podcast and the marketing because there's all these ancillary items that you're giving them. And so you get these customers who are, frankly, they're just never satisfied. So you're always almost talking them off the ledge. And what I decided at that point was, I'm not going to go that route. It's too much work. It's too much worry. I want people to be satisfied. So instead, I did what's called dynamic syndicate ad marketing. So I used a host, and the host provides your marketing effort, and you basically put a timestamp into your podcast, and you get paid a portion of those advertisements by CPM. And for me, removing all that hassle and work, it allowed me to focus more on growing my show and going a numbers route versus a high dollar in low quality route. And that's what really differentiated me on my monetization.
So I want to stay on this subject, especially for the listener. And especially because on the podcast, this show, I frequently say, don't bother with a CPM model. So I always say there's three ways to monetize. The first and worst is dynamic syndicate, cost per meal, CPM. I'm going to get $30 or whatever it is. So it could be $5, it could be $60, but 20 to 30 is pretty normal. I'm going to get $30 per 1,000 people that listen to an episode. And so if I have 5,000 listeners, which is a lot, it's a ton. I've got 5,000 listeners. I'm going to get 30 times 5, which is $150 per episode. And so I say that is the lowest cost one. And you've mentioned that you like it because it's the lowest effort one. So Correct. That's an interesting point. The second one being the one that you said first. You said there's two types of advertising. One is go to be seller. It's very difficult. People are never satisfied. And two is dynamic syndicate ads. Number one for you, which is number two for me. I know that might be confusing to the listener. When we are being a seller, we can command a way higher premium. Instead of $30 CPM, we could easily get $1,000 an episode, even $2,000 or $3,000 per episode by doing it when you reach out to that person. But it is a little bit tough. And what I always say to our clients who want to monetize is, you have a minimum of a 6-month contract for that, and you could do a little bit better price if they do a 12-month contract, because you had a really good point, Christian. You had a great point that was, when you become a seller, it's very difficult. And geez, wouldn't it suck if I went and looked, finally found somebody, and then I sold them, and I only sold them for an episode, or I only sold them for a month of episodes? Well, then you have to go and turn around and go do all of that work again. So I always say 6 months at the minimum to 12. But you can command a way higher premium. Like we're talking 10x, 20x, 30x.
Yes.
And then there's a third way to monetize. And this is when you sell your own coaching, your own consulting, your own product, your own service. And so this is the one that I do on my show is like my listener. They might want help with a podcast, and I've got Grow Your Show at growyourshow.com. And that one makes the highest premium. So we have a client. His name is Marco, and I think he's making around $300,000 a month for his podcast. And that's because he sells his own stuff. So he makes $1 million a quarter, $4 million a year by selling his own stuff. And I can't even fathom what that number is. It's like, let's just call it $28,000 per episode. Yeah. So it's way higher to do that third way. With that said, I really want to hear you talk about your experience and why you would do it one way versus the other, since you are a fan of, it sounds like you're more of a fan of the easy CPM.
Yeah. And those are all great points. And it comes down to me, the maturity of your podcast and your business, right? So if I'm really mature in my automation and my ability to create workflow or my resources, it might be easier for me to off-put some of the episode development, et cetera, and spend time selling. Whereas I'm independent, I don't have that time. So what is my value going to be? My value to the listener is the quality of my episode. And I felt like I could deliver a higher quality episode and gain more reach by focusing more on the podcast and delivery aspects than I could into selling into a advertiser. And it was a juxtaposed position because you can make more. And so the way I looked at it was, if I do the CPM model, I can, have a smaller, but I can have a very predictable income that's coming my way. And I can work on the third payment method or monetization method, which is my ultimate goal of building an asset or a product that is going to ultimately become my number one monetization model. And so by the maturity of my life cycle and my business, I decided build that product version. And along the way, I'm going to expand the reach of my show. And then hopefully the goal is to some point be able to remove myself from the dynamic syndicate ad marketing, because it won't be as much as I really need, and purely focus on the product, because then the quality of my show goes up even more. Now I have no ads. Now I can directly advertise the product within the show without anybody else's influence, et cetera. And I can do that through, again, multiple channels, because along the way, I've built the podcast, but the podcast is only one portion of your product. You also probably have a blog. You also have social media, et cetera. So if you're thinking of the tentacles of arms in your product, in your resources, channels to deliver, it starts to balance its way out. And it is. It's a tough decision. It's different for everyone.
Cool. Like, genuinely, pretty freaking cool. So let's dissect a little bit of this. And I've got a question. I want to ask you how you grow your audience. So I'm looking at is, you've talked about that the podcast grew ever since you bought it instead of shrink, because you did a lot of things right in the purchase and you're continuing to do a lot of things right. Like, really trying to serve the avatar, really trying to give good content, really trying to get in front of the right avatar or the right listener, if we will. And so you've decided to make it the easiest route, even though it's not as much money. But sometimes we trip over dimes to pick up nickels or whatever. And yeah, in this case, like, it sounds like it's really part of the plan. It's really part of the plan because you don't have to do any of the work. And so you can focus on something else that's going to grow. And it's with the ambition or the plan to go to number three, where you're selling your own product, your own service, your own consulting, your own whatever. Yeah. And so you said, here, this is really how I want to monetize. For now, I'm going to go the easy route while I just grow the audience. So the question becomes, especially for the listener, what are the three top things that you would tell to the listener today that have helped you increase the audience since you bought it?
Yeah. And to cover your last thought, my currency changed, right? You're talking about two different types of currency. One type of currency is the advertisement. So that's my paid joint advertisements that I'm doing, or my CPM. But my currency was really my time, because I knew my time was more valuable somewhere else. So it became the difference of the currency type that really helped me with my decision. Now, when I grew my show, I did a couple things. One, I had leveraged the current resources that I had. I was fortunate that I did marketing with this person ahead of time, but I knew all of my customers didn't transfer there. And I knew vice versa, his customers didn't all transfer to mine. So I had a very prominent social media channel that I owned, was in fly fishing. And I started to convert those people over to the podcast and vice versa. So I really commingled that. In addition to that, I just became more organized in a way of marketing. So I created a scorecard, and it had four or five things on it that I knew I had to do. I needed to be consistent on delivering podcasts. That's what they were doing. I needed to match that. I also knew I needed to add additional podcasts. So I'll talk about that a little bit. The next thing I looked at was my social media and or my marketing that I was doing, which was primarily social media. And I had to be very consistent on that. So I had scores that I would achieve during a week. Did I do my 10 here? Did I do my 10 there? Et cetera, et cetera. Did I hit five channels or only three? And that really worked for me on being very succinct weekly of a measure that I could say, you know what? I didn't do enough last week, or I need to do more this week, et cetera. And then watch the growth from there. So that was really valuable to me. One of the biggest things that I did was, when I was doing my research, I also researched just what value comes out in a podcast. And one of the things that I learned was that podcast listeners really have two or three listening types. One type is getting in the car and I'm going to listen to the podcast for 45 minutes or more. The other type is I'm getting in the car and I'm going to drive to the store and I got 10, 15 minutes to listen to something and I want something that I'm going to get value out of. The key is whatever that timestamp is, I need to get value out of it. So 45 minutes, I can deliver one type of value. 10 minutes, I can deliver a different type of value. And the third is I'm going to sit down and I'm going to binge. And I'm going to just listen to episode to episode to episode. And so I did three things. One is I continued the path on which I had, which was a 45-minute interview session. The next thing I did was I created a podcast episode that was only 2 to 15 minutes long. And what I did that was different on this is I didn't organize it with anybody else. It was just me. And so I deliver a tip to my audience. And the key is do it by yourself. One, it gives you authority because you're giving your own information. It's just you. Two, I don't have to do all the headache stuff of organizing and interviewing, asking the interviewer what they're going to talk about, making sure they get scheduled, making sure they show up on time, making sure all the electronics work, yada, yada, yada. There was so much time involved in that that I didn't have to do. So I could literally sit down. I have 52 episodes a year. I can make a list of 52 and I could probably record 20 of them in a couple hours, no problem. And I'm done. So it was extremely effective. And then the last is the binge effort. And the binge effort, what I did is I just educated my audience on where they could find the shows, et cetera. And then I did a quick little trick that came from YouTube. And that was YouTube highlights playlists. So what do? You get into your YouTube channel and you select a playlist that's around a specific topic and you binge watch all of those episodes. I did the same thing on Spotify. Spotify allows you to create playlists. So I went in and created my tips episodes. There was like 35 episodes in one playlist. And then I would market those to people on my social channels and say, hey, here's a playlist for you. I put it together for you. Check it out. And what would they do? They would sit down and they'd start it. And whether they were in the car or wherever they were at, it would just continue to play because it was in this cyclical playlist versus them being in the application on an individual podcast and that it was queued up as a different type of show. So they were leaving my channel.
So I've got a follow-up question on that. Are you saying that you kept a weekly episode? It was weekly and it's still weekly, but you're just intentionally making some of the episodes shorter is one of the things?
Yeah, slightly different. So instead of, I do a weekly show. One show is an interview. I do two shows a week. The second show is the tips episode. So two shows a week. One's 45 minutes long and one is 15 minutes long or less.
Okay, I
see. So I doubled the number of shows.
You doubled the shows. Mm-hmm. And some people listening, they might wonder if Christian or if I double my shows, they'll think like this. My listener isn't going to be able to listen to all of those shows. I hear this all the time, by the way. Like mm-hmm. I'm really imitating like thousands of people right now. Well, my listener can't listen to three episodes a week. My listener can't listen to two episodes a week. My listener doesn't have time to listen every single week. My listener right. can't listen every day. Mm-hmm. But I've always noticed that the podcasts with the most amount of content actually have the most amount of listeners. Yep. So you're not diminishing, you're not making the value on each episode go down when you produce more. You're actually making the value of each episode go up. So it's like I always use this gas station analogy. Like when there's only one gas station on the corner, it doesn't do so well. When there's another gas station at that corner, both of them do pretty well. When there's four gas stations all at the same block, everybody yeah. knows that that's where they go. It doesn't matter if they're going north, south, east, or west. They're going to stop at that place because that's where all the gas stations are. And all of the gas stations make a ton more money, meaning when you have multiple episodes going on, you don't diminish your downloads per episode. You actually increase your downloads per episode, just like having multiple gas stations right. on a block. Same thing with restaurants. If you have to go like 2 miles to go to one restaurant, or you can go 7 miles and there's seven restaurants, mm-hmm. you're going to go to where there's seven restaurants 80% of the time.
Think about it this way. We'll use your analogy, right? If I pull into a corner and there's four different gas stations, there's typically a higher volume of people coming through there. So what do? The first thing I do is I look for the, not the gas station with the best price. Yeah, I might look at that. But then the first thing I do after that is I look which pumps are open. I go to the one with the empty pumps. So my decision's kind of made for me, right? There's always, I always looked at podcasts as, if I'm a listener, I have a certain volume of listening I'm going to listen to. If that's 10 minutes or if that's 4 hours, whatever it is, that's what I'm going to allocate. If the content is there, I'm just going to pick and choose what I want to listen to. I don't have to listen to every episode. There's absolutely no reason for me to. But as long as there's something there for me to listen to, I'm going to stay here. And if I can get someone sticky to stay there, they're usually going to listen to more than one podcast. And that's where you start to see the incremental growth.
We've got a lot of value from you today, Christian. Remember, if you're listening, Christian's got two podcasts. One of them is a fly fishing podcast, and the other one is Transcontinental Minds, which is a business podcast, which is fairly new. As we are speaking, there's only been a couple of episodes launched. Interesting about that other podcast is they're really short. So they set a timer for like 10 minutes. So the whole thing with intro and everything is, I think it's always going to be under 20 minutes, always. Yeah. So that way it's short, it's valuable. Like he's got an episode on branding that came out recently as well. So if you're an entrepreneur, if that's what you're looking at, great. Maybe check out Transcontinental Minds, and that link's in the show notes. And if you are a fisher, if you enjoy fishing, then maybe try out the Fly Fishing Insider podcast. Just scroll down and you can connect. We've gotten lots of value on how do you grow a podcast? How do you monetize a podcast? How do you think about a podcast? Christian's really, I noticed that he's doing this intentionally. He's intentional about every step of the way. If you were looking to buy or sell a podcast, you got a lot of value from it. If you're looking to grow a podcast, you got a lot of value today as well. And some of the most recent takeaways, when I asked three ways to grow, one is, well, he probably gave me like five things. So he did his research and he found that there's a few different ways that people consume podcasts. There's that 10-ish minute way, there's that 45-ish minute way, and then there's the binge way. And so he's trying to serve all of them. How does he serve them? Well, he has an episode that is a 45 minute, maybe an hour of an interview. And he has an episode where it's 2 to 15 minutes, so about 10 minutes of short, quick content that he knows that is good for his listener. And it builds authority for him. It is easier for him to do those. It doesn't take nearly as much time. He doesn't have to research somebody. He doesn't have to ask them questions. He doesn't have to spend an hour with them. He only spends 2 to 15 minutes. And he's also reaching and finding those people that binge. How does he do that? Well, he said he went to YouTube. He found a trick. The trick was playlists. He found that Spotify's did the same thing. So he goes and starts marketing the playlist to his friends on social media. He also has a fly fishing group on social media. So ever since he started the podcast, he's telling people on the podcast about the social group, and he's telling people in social media about the podcast. So they both can grow. And he's telling people about these playlists. Why is it so cool that he gets these playlists? Because as soon as he puts it in front of you, you're going to listen to a ton of episodes because that's how it's intended. It's intended for you to listen to a number of them. Well, now you've just binged. Now you've just triggered an algorithm in his podcast playing platform. Let's call it Spotify or Apple. And now Apple says, wow, people listen to 6 episodes in a row when they listen to Christian. Or if you're listening, insert your name there. When he or she gets a listener, they don't listen to just one. They listen to a bunch. And that triggers another algorithm. Now the podcast playing platform is going to push you in front of more of the people. Because why? Well, they have a responsibility to their investors. Spotify wants to grow. Apple wants to grow. And so if they see a binge-worthy podcast, they're going to push it in front of people. Think about if Netflix only showed you the crappy movies. If Netflix showed you the movies that nobody was watching, it wouldn't turn out so well. But every time you log into Netflix, it says, here's today's top 10. Every single time you log in, here's today's top 10. Here's the most famous shows, the most growing shows on our platform right now. They always put you in the front of the ones that people are binging because they make money when you stay on their platform. Mm-hmm. Christian, thank you for all of the value. Your website's in the show notes. Your podcasts are in the show notes. You've dropped a ton of stuff. So I'll just mention to the listener that the next episode is going to be another interview episode. I'll see you there. This is serious. Don't go. Now that you've gotten whatever value that you feel that you got, the actionable takeaways, you need to implement the stuff that you learn. If you remember me talking about bird church once, and they learn how to fly, and then they walk home, I don't want you to walk home. I want you to fly home. So take the steps, take the actionable steps for your benefit so that you can become a better podcaster. That's the only thing that I ask of you. And I'll see you for more actionable tips on the very next episode.